You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Welcome back to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. And after a very interesting episode and a change of pace with our conversation with the general managers, we're back to basics again and back to going one-on-one. And today it's a special one because we have a legend of the game, a recent legend. And when I played, we used to be called big men, but my next guest redefined the word big man, and he did it with style, he did it with grace, and at times, he did a little bit of anger. I know one thing, I was just happy that I was retired before he came onto the scene. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the podcast, Sofo Tsatsanidis. My man, how are you?
I'm great. Nice being with you.
Nice to have you, man. It's been, first of all, of course, I want to appreciate your time, but I really meant that. Like, I'm 55, right? And I've been out of this game longer than I played it. Eventually, you'll get there.
Yeah.
and I look back sometimes and I see some of these players. I'm like, damn, man, I wish I could play against him. I would, you know, I'd take him to the hoop. I'd, you know, score out. And then when I saw you in Barcelona in 2011, I was like, man, I am right where I need to be. Retired with headphones on my head and makeup on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and I understand. Actually, Barcelona 2011, that was a great year. Mm-hmm. That was a great time. But, you know, nature, man, that made me big, and I tried to take advantage of it.
Exactly. Hey, first of all, I gotta go through my typical question I have to ask all you guys here in this time of year. Family good, everybody good with Corona, everything going all right?
Yeah, everything great. The kids are great. We have our rock in our family. My wife always there supporting us and taking care of us. So we're great. I'm just like a backup singer. So, you know, so it's a nice change of pace.
It's not bad, is it? These have been difficult times, man. So it's not actually a bad time to be a backup singer.
Yeah, that's true. There are a lot of things going on. It's a difficult time for everybody with Corona. So, you know, we're just trying to take it the day at a time.
Exactly. Let's jump in, man, because you got an interesting story. You know, a big guy like you from Greece. You don't look like the typical person from Greece, obviously. Nope. And when I first came out, I was like, hey, I mean, what's up with that name? Come on, man. He doesn't look like that's his real name, you know? But you're originally born in Cameroon.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. I was born in Tiko, Cameroon. It was my mother's town. For some reason, my father decided to take a job there as a civil engineer. And so went my mother. And I guess he wanted to have some fun going in Cameroon, but he came back with a wife and a kid.
Look, is Cameroon still a part of your life? Do you go back there? Have you, I mean, because you left early, right?
Yeah, I left like when I was months old, which wasn't advisable. And I always tell my parents, man, you guys are lucky that I didn't got something or my head got very hurt or something. You shouldn't allow like six month old babies fly. It's like, this is not natural. But anywho, I got pretty young in Greece, and I've been in Cameroon only one time.
One time?
Yeah, only one time. I don't keep in touch, but I don't deny that part of my life.
Right. You have a brother also that played basketball, right? Alexandros? Is he younger than you or older than you?
He's younger than me. He's younger than me.
So he was born in Greece then.
He was born in Greece, and actually he was the first to start playing. He wasn't he was talented. He is talented. But he just didn't want to do the work.
is he a big boy like you?
Yeah, he's big.
Yeah, he's
big. But like I said, he didn't want to do that work.
Because I read that through our research that you just didn't really like the game. You didn't really care about it that much. And I was wondering if he was an influence, but it sounded like if he didn't want to do the work, he wasn't much of an influence either.
No, he wasn't. I mean, seriously, when I was younger, yeah, I didn't know nothing about the game. I mean, when I started, it was literally a fluke. I mean, over the years, you know, you just develop a love for the game. I love how exciting it is, and how the work you put outside the games and the court translate in success in the you know, in the competitions.
And I feel like from what I've seen as a child, you started and everything happened so quickly. You know, by the time you were 14, you're on the Greek national team. By the time you were 15, you were transferred to Heracles. And it was like, you know, are kids that age in your, I mean, you talking from your experience, are they physically and mentally ready for things that happen so fast?
Seriously, I really don't believe that I'm ready. And I mean, I know for sure I wasn't ready. I mean, mentally at least, physically, I might be, but like I said, not everybody's like me. So physically at least. Right. So it was crazy. I mean, I started playing in Kavala when I was 12. I got transferred from the kids division to the men's team when I was 13. 14.
The men's division at 13.
Yeah,
it just doesn't sound. There's something that doesn't sound right there.
Yeah, it's a little bit. So afterwards, I got transferred, and then they called me up for the national team, and I was playing as a starter when I was 17, I think.
Does this for 15 years, 7 months, and 25 days? Does that mean anything to you?
Yeah, it was my first game as a pro.
I got two questions for that. Is that record still stands today?
No, I don't think it does. I think someone younger actually played, which was a surprise for me. But I think they put a younger kid, but I really don't know what he's doing right now.
Looking back on it, is that record something that means something to you? Was it important for you? Was it something that might have hurt you too?
It's tough to say. It's tough to say because the day that they actually told me that you're going to play, it was, you know, the whole week they were paying special attention to me. We like work harder. And I was like, it's probably, you know, same old. You got to be focused. You're still young. You need to work. And then 2 days before the game, they actually told me that you're going to be in the squad. I was like, okay. So I'll just stay in the corner and just clap whenever we make a basket.
Right.
And game day, the coach was like, okay, so it's you, Hadis Retas, Yamadidis, and so forth. I was like, what? I was like, so for who? He's like, yeah, get dressed, too. Let's go.
So they never warned you that, hey, man, you're going to get to start this game and give you a little time to prepare mentally?
No. I mean, you know, they always tell you when you're young, like, the minute you're in the squad, you always gotta be ready to play. But you never expect when you're 15, you're actually gonna be like playing.
Yeah, but I mean, that you always have to be ready to play is when you're sitting on the bench and you've been practicing, you've been with the team for 3 years, you know? But I mean, you're playing at Heracles too, so you're playing against teams. I mean, you're not playing second division, you're playing Panathinaikos, Olympiacos, Aerdis, PAOK, you're playing all these big teams.
Yeah, I mean it was actually really fun because my second game actually playing was against Olympiacos when Dino Raja was playing there. And I remember coach putting me in, and I got scored like 3 times. And he was like, what are you doing? Come on, you gotta be more focused. I was like, okay, he's Dino Raja. What you want me to do? I still don't remember how I got scored 3 times. I just can't.
Hey, you know, like, well, you know, when I was at the point where I was a veteran and you saw a young guy come out on the court, it was just like, you start licking your chops. As, you know, Dina Rice is like, yeah, like, bring the young guy out.
Yeah, it was really funny because when I was actually guarding the first time, I was thinking, like, should I say something? Like, hey, nice to meet you. Got an honor to play with against you. Like, should I say something? So I was like, no, be professional. And by the time I knew it, he was going back to defense. I was like, okay.
and the thing about Dina that I remember, because I was with Ike in 99, and he lived down the street from me. I think he was with Panathinaikos then. And I just remember him being a god. He was like, I mean, he had this big house and there's like security guards outside his house. And I'm like, who is this guy? You know? So I couldn't even imagine, you know, at 15 going up against them.
Yeah, it was some event. He was going crazy. The coach was going at me, be like, why are you letting him score on you? Why are you letting him score on you? I was like, I don't know what to do.
It's kind of like, hey, coach, have you seen what he's been doing over the last 5 years? He scores on everybody.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I was really upset because I was thinking I really messed up. Like, okay, I was supposed to actually stop him. Yeah. And I was thinking, like, when I went home, I was, like, really depressed because – not because how I got scored on, because I was thinking, like, I underestimate myself because they have more faith in me than I had on myself at that time. But I had, I had Nikos Adivretas and Diamantidis telling me, it's like, yeah, don't worry about it. He has to yell. I mean, you have to go through that. Nobody expected you not to get scored on. I mean,
it's all part of the process.
Yeah. So you got to get used to that. So.
After that season, you had a pretty good season. After that season, you took off and went to Italy, went to Cantu.
Yeah.
What? I mean, you're young. Did you bring family with you? Did you go on your own?
I went on my own.
I
went on my own, and I was scared. I didn't know. I was terrified, but I had great teammates. The captain of the team was Dan Gay.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great dude. Yeah. And also Sean Stonrook, I played with him too. And they literally took great care of me. But the thing about that here is before the playoffs, I remember there was one day we're going to a game and called my agent and she's like, I wanna go home, man. I was like, I can't. I just can't do it. It's like, why? Somebody hurt you? Somebody upset you? It's like, no, I just want to go home.
But this is at the end of the season, right before the playoffs, you said. So you've been there the whole year, and you just had this feeling at the end of the season.
Yeah, it was close. I mean, basically, we lost the first round, but I just couldn't do it. I was close to the season. My agent was telling me, you're close. I mean, you guys gonna go through one, two rounds and you're gonna come back. So like, yeah, but I can't do it. Mm. I don't think I don't have the mentality to actually push through this. So like I wanna go home. And eventually he went with Tough Love. He's like, well, you can't. You gotta stay there.
It's like, I'll be your psychologist for a little bit, but at the end it's like, no, you're staying.
Yeah, well, you can't go anywhere. So it was. But it was fun. It was fun. I mean, my mother visited a lot.
Did you live with somebody? Did you room?
Nope. I lived alone. That was actually a really bad decision because I burnt down my kitchen.
You burnt down your kitchen.
Yeah, I burnt down my kitchen too.
You know, I've heard so many stories in my years of Americans coming over to Europe and like blowing up the cars because they don't know how to drive stick shifts. Oh. You hear all kinds of stories, but I never heard of a Greek guy going to Italy and burning down the kitchen.
Yeah, I burned down my kitchen. That's an embarrassing story. I don't even want to
we won't get too deep into that. Don't worry.
But the funny thing is, I called, like I said, I called my buddy's son, and I told him, like, yo, son, my kitchen was burning. He's like, so he asked me, like, is burning right now, or he put it out, it just burned. I was like, I put it out. So like, okay, then go back to sleep. He's like, you gotta practice more. I was like, okay. But eventually everybody came, like fire department and everybody.
Oh my God.
They took me to the hospital because I held too much smoke. It's like, they asked me, like, why are you staying in the room? It's like, son told me to go to sleep.
I mean, you obviously spoke no Italian, right?
No. I mean, close to the middle of the season, mm-hmm. I understood a lot, but I had a little bit of capacity to, you know, communicate. I was seriously, when I went there, I was thinking like, yeah, everybody speaks English. No, not in Italy. I think some people were messing with me because I was speaking English and everything was cool, but I knew they understood me, but they refused to respond to me in English. Yeah, so I was like, man, you guys are messing with me. I'm sorry.
You know, the one thing I always said about my time in Italy is like, I went over there when I was young, and the people start talking to you, and they're talking to you in Italian. I had no idea what they were saying. My mom was Italian, but I never learned it. And it's like, they start yelling at you. They start talking louder, you know, yeah. In Italian. And I'm like, no. I said, I can hear you perfectly. You know what I mean? You don't need to turn the volume up. I just don't understand what you're saying, you know?
Yeah, so I mean, that happened to me a lot. I mean, I remember it happened when I went to the supermarket. Mm-hmm. And I was asking a guy for some kind of particular brand of juice that they were giving us in the court, in the team. And he was telling me in the second corridor to the right. And I was like, where is it? He's like, the second corridor to the right. I was like, okay, yeah, where is it? I was like, can you tell me? It was funny. Yeah, they do that. I mean, it was great. It was great playing Gattuso, but like I said, I wasn't just ready.
Right. So you finally get out of there and you come back, but now you're going big time. Now you come back and you're going to the big boys, to the big red, to Olympiacos. This pretty much changes everything for you now because you've been young, you've played on the national team, you've done some good jobs on the teams that you played for. So the expectations now are triple because not only are you on one of the best clubs in all of the continent, you're also with fans that have more expectations than even the clubs do.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, this is the best way to put it, actually. Mm-hmm. The fans get more expectations than the club do.
Yeah.
I mean, my time in Olympiacos was okay. It was great. I mean, I had the opportunity to meet one of my closest colleagues and one of my closest friends also, Kostas Adichristos. Mm-hmm. He was my trainer, and he was my trainer for all the years after that. We had a great understanding, and actually, when they told me that I would go to Olympiacos, I didn't believe it, because truth be told, I started playing pro when I was 15. I mean, I was already shocked that I've been in a team that I've seen play in the television, but the players that I was there with, they weren't yet the guys that everybody knows. I mean, Nikos and Dimitris and Lazaros, Papadopoulos were still, still in the first steps. So, right. And still all the big name players like that I've seen and I knew, I only played them with him once, and all the other times I've seen him from the fans. Mm. So the minute I went to Olympiacos, I was really shocked. Like they asked for me. I was really impressed because they actually told me that Coach Kozlowskis, he specifically asked, like, I'll join the team. It was a little bit confusing because the minute I joined, he was on my case. I mean, he was on my case. I was working really hard in the training, dunking everything, never letting up. But still, he was on my case. I mean, actually, the minute I was in Olympiacos, I wasn't doing really well at the start. But after we had a long conversation with Coach Kozlowskis around December. And after that, I started just going through it. It was getting easier and playing better. We eventually end up playing against Maccabi for a chance to go to the Final Four. It was a pretty exciting season.
That was your first season. That was, in the research that I've done and everything that I've looked at, that was the first time there was a mention of your weight being an issue. It seemed like Kozlowskis wanted you to be trimmed down a little bit, to be a little bit. Was that something that you felt or you came across throughout the early part of your career, or just was this the first time?
That was the first time.
And did you think that your weight was not an issue? Did you think that you were fine? I mean, because whenever I was overweight, I was like, yeah, I'm fine as long as I can score. It's all that matters.
I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, they asked me one time when I was in Cantu, like, if I feel comfortable with the weight. I said, like, as long as I'm faster than the other guy, I'm good.
Right.
I mean, at that time I was young and I was fast. So I was like, okay. In Olympiacos, it was a big issue with Kozlowskis. He wanted me to get trimmed down, like, a lot. Mm-hmm. But during the season, he saw how, at one time I got down a lot. Like, I lost like 15, 20 kilos. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't just do it. I couldn't play the way I'm used to. I had no strength, no energy. So they decided with Kostas, like, they would keep my weight under control in a specific way. Kostas Lakas was a little bit weird in some stuff. I remember one day I was late for practice or whatever. And he made me run the stairs up and down. So I was like, this is good for you. This is good for your legs and you can lose weight. I was like, all right, I'll run the stairs. I don't mind. So when they started practicing, he told me like, yeah, come down. We don't have enough players. So I started dunking and, having a great practice. And this is where my nightmare started. After that, he is like, man, those stairs are good for you. You'll do it every day. I was like, man, this is amazing. Every day I had to run the stairs up and down. Every day. After that day, every day I was running the stairs.
So your warm-up every day was running the stairs before?
Yeah, I was running the stairs every day.
Did he make you do it before the games too?
Actually, no. Actually, before the games, he made me run the bike.
Oh, run the bike. Okay,
you warmed up. Yeah, because... We played against Maccabi the very first time. Actually, that was the game that I started, being more comfortable in EuroLeague. So the very first time, it still was December, I think, we played against Maccabi. And I said, I don't feel well, doing the shoot around. So I want to ride the bike. So I rode the bike for like 4 or 5 minutes, like really hard, to get the anxiety off and everything. And he was really upset. And Costa's trainer told him, don't worry about it. He'll be okay. He'll be great. And he came and whispered in my ear, you better play great today, man, because we're both going to get fired. after I played that game, someone like, yeah, you got to ride the bike. You got that little superstition. So whatever. Right. But it was fun. It was a fun year for me because I realized I'm more skilled than I initially thought. Playing with tougher opponents is a little bit more fun. Just blowing through everybody.
Your career high when you were in Olympiacos was like 24 points in a game. That was early on. And when we talked about the fan expectations, the club expectations, all that other stuff, is having a game like that beneficial to you? I mean, it obviously helps you, but you start to put more expectations in people's minds.
Because
people think that you score 24, you can do it every game. And it just isn't like that.
Not EuroLeague, at least.
No, yeah.
Well, that game, let me remember. That was a Zalgiris game. I guess
Zalgiris. Yeah, Zalgiris, exactly. You got such a good memory, man.
I remember specific things because when something bad happened before, I will remember it.
Well, we always remember the bad stuff, unfortunately.
I remember that week I did something. I don't remember what. And Coach Velasquez was really upset with me. And he was, okay, thank you. So I guess it's a really important game. And so you better play well. You got to run. You got to play defense. And I remember at that time, the big man was Bert. And he told me, that guy doesn't play defense. So I expect you to dunk everything. I was like, what? Oh, that can happen in EuroLeague. Nice. I can dunk everything, but like you gotta try dunk everything. I was like, okay. So I went there in the mentality like I gotta get myself out of the doghouse, man. It's like I gotta go. I gotta try really hard. So and everything went well. I mean, I always said that because I was the youngest, I had a lot of great teammates that they really took care of me. So in that game, I remember everybody be like, okay, let's get something in great positions. Come on. So like, let's do this. So like, okay. And it was great.
And I think that's about the time you developed this nickname, Baby Shaq.
They start calling me that EuroLeague. I mean, the first time they called me that, that I met in, when I was in a tournament in Mannheim. When I was 16, I think, and by that time, when I was 16, I was playing the national team with the Greek national team with under 16. So by the time, I mean, I was always practicing with the men's team since 13 until I was 16. I was always playing with the men's team. So my teammate, my opponents was Lazos Papadopoulos, and every day for like 2 years.
Right.
I never practiced with anybody else. So I went there and everybody said it's an important tournament. So you got to go hard. So you got to play hard. So everybody be focused. And my very first game, I mean, I start scoring easily. And the second game, I started to start dunking everything. Every time I was under there, I would start dunking. And then they just start calling me Baby Shaq. But,
Did you like that? Did you accept that?
I mean, it was fun. Of course, it was fun. And of course, it's an honor, to get compared to with a future Hall of Famer. But I'm not shocked. I mean, the guy was what, 7'2"?
Yeah.
I played against him once. He's a beast. He's a beast. I mean, everybody thinking like, especially. When I played against him when I was in Olympiacos, he was like, yeah. And I remember Josh Childers, he was messing with me because the minute I got the ball in the post, he passed me the ball in the post and he'd be like, yeah, so for Son, who's the baby now? I was like, oh, man, don't say that. I was like, don't say that. I was so nervous. He said, like, and then I heard Zach behind me saying, like, yeah, Son me. I was like, what? No, I want none of this.
Yeah, you don't want to make Shaq mad either. Nah, that's for sure.
Nah, he was a great guy. I remember after the game, he found me in the parking lot and he talked to me for like 30 minutes, gave me a lot of advice, a lot of encouragement. He said he was telling me about how to conduct myself. I mean, not everybody will like you. I mean, but you got to do what you got to do. And yeah. It was great.
That's a good guy to get advice from, man. Let me tell you.
He's a great guy, yeah. Actually. I was really surprised. Actually, before the game, I was really nervous. And I was thinking, like, because everybody, before I went to the draft, everybody was telling me, you need to drop the nickname, Baby Shaq. Shaq is going to be pissed. So I had that mentality, like... So I had that mentality that everybody, Zach is pissed at me. So you're probably going to kill me or something. So I was like, okay.
But you just can't drop a nickname. I mean, it's not like, hey, Shaquille, I decided to drop the nickname. Don't be mad at me. You can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, no, you can't really do that. I mean, yeah. I was trying in every interview. I was trying to say, like, I mean, it's an honor being with Zach, but I'm my own guy. I want to do my own thing. But no, that nickname never dropped. I mean, I remember after the draft, I went to Cantu and they had like t-shirts saying Baby Shaq. I was like, oh, come on, man.
You can't escape it. There's no way.
But like I said, when we played against Cleveland and Shaq was there, I remember tying my shoes and suddenly I heard a voice like screaming, Floyd, really loud from the court. It was like, where's my baby? Where's my baby? I was like, what? I was like, no, that can't happen. No, that's not possible. And then Shaq came in and be like, hey, there you are, little fella. I was like, little, what do you mean, little?
That's too funny. He's great, man. Hey, you guys get in Olympiacos, you guys get to the final, well, to the final four in 09, 2010. Yeah. And then also in what, 8 and 9, and then 9 and 10, I think.
Yeah. And I think it was Berlin and Paris.
Yeah, you lost in the semis the first one, and then you lost to Barcelona in the final, the 18-point loss. First of all, I want to know what it was like as a younger guy. But you've got experience now. The difference between your first trip to the Final Four and your second trip to the Final Four. Do you remember any, like, having more experience, being more comfortable the second time?
Not really. I mean, my head, I mean, it was both exciting and scary at the same time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great that you were, like, one of the top four teams in EuroLeague. Mm-hmm. Like, especially the second time when you're like the top four in the second time in a row, but the second time you feel like, okay, this is our second time in a row, we better do something.
Right. And how difficult is that to come out of that 18-point loss? That it makes it just that much harder to get to that final game. And I've been there, and I know the feeling.
I mean, Barcelona was a beast.
Yeah, they were a great team.
Yeah, they were a beast of a team. I mean, and Navarro, he was doing some crazy stuff in the court. I was like, come on, man. Like, well, I was like, be serious. He was shooting threes like it's a playground. I was like, everybody were like really down. I mean, it was a tough loss. It was a really tough loss. And, you know, I mean, we lost 18. Everybody were really depressed. I have a reputation of being, like, you know, a little bit, you know, making jokes in the locker room. I was like, oh, at least we didn't lose 40. The team that lost 40 in the finals, so at least we didn't lose 40. So
right.
It was tough and upsetting. And the worst part was, like I said, the fans. Right. Like, when we left, they were yelling, saying that we didn't try enough, we didn't fight enough in the court.
And you know, it's interesting because even though you know what you've done,
yeah,
and even when you hear it, and it's hard to ignore it. It's hard to just say, because in all reality, you're playing in a way, you're playing for your team, but you play for them also. So it's so hard to ignore those comments, man, sometimes. And nobody knows what it does to us mentally.
That's true. It does messing you up afterwards. Like, it's making it more difficult to interact outside with people and everything. I mean,
right. I couldn't play today, for example, with the social media thing.
No, it's crazy.
You know?
I went through that turn that mm-hmm. happened, like, when they asked me, so like, how's like playing basketball those years? I was like, the most crazy things that happened to me, was when they changed the shot clock, because I went through that and the time. When I started playing, we still had like the, you know, 20 minutes, 30 seconds.
Right.
Like, okay, so that changed. And then the whole social media changed. I mean, I remember my first year in Olympiacos, if I wanted to know something, I went downstairs, I went down to my apartment, went to the little kiosk across the street, and got a newspaper.
Right. And if you didn't want to go get a newspaper, you just didn't go get it.
You didn't know, it's just the tone, but
No one brought it to you and said, hey, look at this.
After 6 years, boom, 7 years, something like that, everything changed. Everything is like right out of the open. Mm-hmm. And then some, I don't know, some smartass in the news showed like, yeah, let's put comments under the...
Yeah, exactly.
Under the whole thing, on the article. And now you can, you don't want to read the comments, but you still read them. And it's like, it's messing you up.
Yeah. From after 5 years at Olympiacos, you head over to another major powerhouse in Tel Aviv, and you actually have a great season there. It's almost like a breakout season, 12 points a game, 4 rebounds, and you got an assist. You're one of the most historic teams, and you go back to the Final Four with that thing. It's your third straight year in a Final Four. Are you getting used to going to the Final Four now? Is it because... When I talk to kids, it's always like, or even players, I'm like, enjoy every Final Four because you never know when you're going back, you know?
That is true. I mean, actually, my year in Maccabi, I wanted to play Maccabi since I was 15 years old. And they,
really?
And Heracles took me in the trip with him. Basically, I wasn't playing. I was just, carrying stuff. I was stunned. It was a great experience. The fans, the way they interact with the crowd, the players.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It was great. I mean, it was unlike anything I've ever seen in at least Greece. So I was thinking, like, I was asking my agents, like, what do I have to do to play Maccabi? If they want you, they will call you. So, like, all right. When they asked me to play, I was really excited. And I was ready to say yes.
But that's going to be your second time out of your home country. The first time, as you said, didn't go bad, but it didn't go great. I mean, I think you're like any typical foreigner that goes to another country, and they just get to the point where I'm like, I need to be home. I'm homesick, whatever. Where, even though you love Maccabi, you love the fans, you loved everything about the program because you saw it in person. Was there that fear of being, being away from home, being in another country?
Not really at the time. Not really.
Yeah, because Tel Aviv is beautiful. That's why. I mean, actually, if anybody from Cantu is listening to this, I'm sorry, but those two cities can't compare.
No, they can't. They can't, seriously. But actually, to tell you the truth, I went there with my trainer, Kostas. We went there together the first time. So he stayed with me for like a month, to get things up to speed, like what I need, about practicing mostly. But he helped me to navigate a lot of stuff also. But it was different than Cantu. I mean, basically, when I went to Cantu, I was still the kid. I mean, when I went to Maccabi, it was different. I mean, I played a lot, I traveled a lot. And I was around great guys a lot, so I knew how to conduct myself in a serious way, in a serious program. So,
and plus, at this point, you're a little bit more mature too. It wasn't like you 6 years ago in Italy.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, it's like you said, it's a great program too. I mean, the way they help you and the way they support you. I mean, I made some great friends. Even my wife, she just loves it there. She wants to go back there.
She wants to move back.
Yeah, well, you can. I retired. I was like,
we can, but it'll be a different life, that's for sure. With them, you go to your third straight Final Four. And this time, what we talked about before, this one's in Barcelona, I think, right?
That was in Barcelona.
And you lost that one to Panathinaikos. I'm just looking at you, shaking your head, and go, man. I, you don't even have to say anything.
Well, I mean, I was. If you ask me, even now, I was so sure that we're gonna win this. I was so sure that we're gonna win this. I started having doubts that things might go bad because we had the Holocaust Day in Tel Aviv in Israel, and we had to change the time. We played a little bit earlier.
I remember that. Yeah.
So we canceled morning practice. At that time, as a team, we had we were doing a lot of, you know, touch-ups during morning practice. Everybody have put in their opinions in how you want to do this done, and everybody, you know, like a mini meeting. So I was like, okay, we're gonna be okay. There's no worries. And then I was in the elevator, and I heard Diamantes this is in the court shooting. I was like, that guy's out for blood. That guy's coming for us, man.
And of course, you know him very well.
I know. I was like, oh my God, that guy's coming for blood. And I remember, yes. And I remember everybody said, like, don't worry, we're going to stop him. I was like, yeah, okay. What are you going to stop? This is when I started having doubts. But I was sure 100% we're going to get it. I was sure. I was always
You guys dominated Real Madrid in the first game. I mean, it was.
We're playing great. We're playing great. Even though Real Madrid had a lot of potential at that time, they weren't the team that they are now.
No, they were still young at that point. Yeah. That was.
But we had a great game. I mean, we had a great squad. I mean, we're strong in every position, basically.
Yeah. No, you guys had a great team, but you know, isn't it crazy in this game how we always talk about these emotional roller coasters and the mental part of the game and how you could win a semifinal game on Thursday night, for example, or Friday night, and be elated and be in the top of your life, and then all of a sudden you come out on Sunday, and one game feels like you've lost your whole season, you destroyed the whole season. And I think that's what determines whether players are good players, great players, or never make it. Because I played with people that were way better than I've ever played, jumped better, quicker, shot better, but they never made it because it was more of a mental thing. And the fact that you can be up here one day and then the next day be down here, like you said, you got fans telling you that you didn't try hard enough, but they weren't there telling you the night before that you guys are the best, you know what I mean? It's so difficult. And losing that game again, it's your third time in a row.
That game was, it was really bad because that season, I mean, I was there. I was one of the main guys that they were supposed to, I mean, it was a completely different situation for me. I was like, I mean, I helped the team to get there, and I was thinking, like, we're going to take it all the way. But it was tough. I mean, sometimes after you lose a game like that, especially after a win like that against Madrid, you're thinking, like, man, what was the season all about? But, you know, you got to bounce back fast because we had to go back to Tel Aviv and win the championship. But, you know, something, I don't know, this conversation started, like, getting to me right now.
Oh, don't worry. It's going to get good. Don't worry.
No, I'm just saying, like, because I was really confident we're going to get this in 2011. Man, I mean.
Hey, don't worry. You know what's coming up. Everybody knows what's coming up. The good part's coming.
I remember this season, like, yesterday. I mean, we dominated the first round.
Yeah.
We finished with 9-10. I mean, after a loss by, like, almost 30 points from Gustavo. Tell them, tell Keramik then. Man, you messing with me right now. Okay, let's go.
Wait, I'm gonna mess you up now more because the next year you get to the quarters and that's it. And then you take off and you go back home to Panathinaikos? How dare you? I mean,
what? Like, man, at least I had a in between.
Right,
jump teams like
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. You took a breather before, but you didn't go all Spanulis on them, you know.
Oh man, you go there. You went there. Okay. Well, yeah. I had it in between, and at that time, I decided to stay back home in Greece because actually it was a family thing. I think. I mean, my wife was pregnant. In our second child, my baby girl, and we decided to take a breather from traveling and stay home.
So the season, I mean, I don't want to get into the fans and everything else. I could imagine what that must have been for you, going from the red jersey to the green jersey and everything else. But what you told me earlier is that your wife loved Tel Aviv. And then after Panathinaikos, the one that I was going to mention was how hard it is to win back-to-back titles in the EuroLeague. And you went from Maccabi, where Panathinaikos beat you, and you went to Panathinaikos, who...
Nobody ever made that association. Nobody.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know what? That's why. Hey, Sofa. That's why I got this job, man. This is my job to do that. Like, I was thinking, like, what was he thinking? Not only did he go to the other team in Greece, he went to the team that just won the Final Four. And he's looking for a repeat. That's gonna be a tough one.
They even beat us in the semis. Exactly. Playoffs. They even whooped us in the playoffs, actually.
But after that, you go back to Maccabi. Was that based on your wife? Because you mentioned to me earlier that your wife loved Tel Aviv. And
no, actually, that was because of me. I mean, I wanted to go back, but my wife, okay. I did one for you, not just one for me.
You so want I me?
Go back. So like, she was like, I don't care. Let's go. I was like, all right. I mean, I love it. It's like, okay. So we went back to Tel Aviv with both our kids, and it was really great. It was
you got to play there with David Blatt, who he was my first guest on the crossover, and I actually was at Olympiacos to do the interview with him, and when he was coaching there, and I watched him coach before he did the interview. I did the interview. And like I told you before, I'm like, every now and then I see a player and I'm like, man, I wish I could play again, you know?
Yeah.
And I looked at Coach Blatt and I'm like, Coach, you're the first coach has ever made me think that I miss playing this game. I said, because the way you handled your players, the way you coach, and of course it was just one day. I didn't see him make anybody run the stairs, so to speak, or jump on the bike, you know? But I just can't. I felt like playing with him. It must have been just a comfortable situation for you, because it seemed like he understood you as a player.
Yeah, from the first day we had some great communication. He was a great guy. I mean, great guy, great coach. He always trying to make you understand. Now, without yelling, but
right.
I mean, try to make you understand what you need to do and how you need to do it. I mean, he will explain everything to you, and he was really understanding. I mean, especially that my third year in Maccabi, I developed a little sleeping disorder, and like I couldn't really get sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But he was always understanding. So like, I remember calling one time and trying to get. I was like, can I skip morning practice right before a game, because I didn't get no sleep. I need to get some sleep because I won't be able to play. And I remember saying to me, like, you know, so go to sleep, man, and then come back, can't come earlier. And you're gonna watch the whole video. And you gotta get your shots up and everything. I was like, all right, coach. And I remember being there 5 hours earlier, watching the video, getting my shots up with trainer Kowalski. And then I had a great game. I mean, he was so understanding, and he was always there if you needed a question or to help you through something. I mean, I remember everything. I remember every time when I wasn't feeling right in practice. It was because during practice, I always make jokes and everything sometimes. And when I wasn't my usual self, he was always asking me, like, how you doing? How are you? And every time a family member was in the court, every time the first thing he did, he was always greet the family member, asking questions, how you like your life in Tel Aviv, how's everything. He was a great guy, a really stand-up guy.
Yeah, I love talking to him. I love meeting him and everything. But he took you back to your fourth Final Four. See, now you can't shake your head and be upset with me, because we're gonna talk about the good stuff now. You guys play the first game, which was which was a crazy game because you guys had no chance to win that game against Cheska. None whatsoever. You're down by 15 in the third quarter.
Actually, we were so lucky that year when Blue came back in December. We were so lucky. We needed that guy back. I mean, there was no chance of winning that game. Cheska was, you know, they were dominant in every position in the court.
They were the squad. I mean, they were just and they dominated you through the first three quarters of that game.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough. I mean, thinking like usually when we're playing, we had like when you're playing against another team, usually you have an advantage somewhere.
Right.
We had an advantage in nowhere. Even in the perimeter, they were like, you know, they were great. At the post, I mean, they had the one player. I mean, like, oh my god, I just didn't like playing against him. Sasa Khan, that guy is just like nonstop. He was going, just going nonstop. I'm like, come on, man, come on, man, just relax a little bit. He'll be like going up, getting up, Kiro, coming back down, going up again. I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, he was an active player, man. He was all over the place.
All over the place. I was, oh my god! And they were thinking like they were shooting, so like he was up there doing the pick and roll. Suddenly, I feel someone in my back. I was like, "Man, what are you doing down here?" I was like thinking like, "What are you doing right here? Like, go up there, go!" It's like, come on, man, let me get that rebound. But yeah, they were dominant everywhere. I mean, they had Milos. Man, everybody, I don't have to say anything about Milos. That guy is out of this world. But. But yeah, actually, I was really surprised. I watched that video like a million times. I mean, the one guy that I never expected ever in my life to actually make a mistake, Victor Criapa, he actually made one.
I can still remember seeing that play where it looked like he just handed the ball over. It was so weird.
I have immense respect for him because he's a guy doing things by the numbers. Like, he was really focused. I mean, right. He will pass the pass. He will do the pass when he needed.
Yeah, he's just he's fundamentally sound. He never made mistakes.
Yes. I was really surprised. I was like, we're like literally lucky. And I remember watching somebody made a video about when Victor Criapa made the mistake, and then suddenly you see a big finger, like the finger of God, pushing the ball out of his hands. And I was like, well, that's it. There it is. I mean, there's no other explanation for me. I mean, like, there it is.
Oh, social media. It's every time, man. You guys come back from 15 down, win that game, and then I can't remember if it was the first game or the second game of the Final Four. I think it was the first game, right?
The first game, yeah.
Then you guys got to watch Real Madrid just go out and blow out Barcelona. They just crushed Barcelona. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, all right, as I'm doing this podcast and I'm doing the research and I'm writing it up, I'm like, my man's been to three straight Final Fours. This is number four. He basically shouldn't have been in the final that night anyways because they should have been beat by Cheska. But like you said, the hand of God came down and helped you guys out. How many times during that weekend of Final Four did you think to yourself, like, damn, man, I can't lose another one. I can't leave here again with a loss.
Actually, seriously, I never thought about that. I never had a thought like that. I
mean, really?
Yeah, about winning Real Madrid, I was, you know, there's always situations in the game that you can't control, so you can't be 100% sure that you're gonna win. Mm-hmm. But I remember because Borussia was playing with Real Madrid at the time. I'd travel Madrid all the time, and I asked him, like, because they had practice earlier than us, I asked him, like, how was it? You guys did a lot of stuff? He's like, no, man, we're just chilling. Man. When the guys heard that, man, they were on fire. They were like, man, we're gonna mess them up. They were like really pissed. Because we went at it the day before the practice really hard. And they were just chilling. Actually, we lost two times. We lost two times in against Real during the season. I remember I had a teammate, Ryan Stack, when I was in Olympiacos and Aris. He told me, like, usually when two teams are close strength-wise, you can't lose three games against them. You're going to win one. Well, I guess he was right. We won one, the important one.
You won the important one. That was really how did it feel, man, to finally get it? Like, I know you're telling me that you didn't think about losing it, but once you won it, it had to be an amazing feeling to finally get it, considering it was your fourth try.
I mean, actually, I want to correct that. I was really thinking like, yeah, there's no way we're gonna lose this. There's no way we're gonna lose this during the whole thing. But when we went to the finals, I was thinking, in my mind, it was like, basically, it's like, I wouldn't know what we're gonna do if I lose it. We'll lose it. Like, I was thinking, like, well, I think, like, the world would end after four final fours, no wins. I would be like, man. But when we got it, I mean, there were smiles and laughing everywhere.
I saw the picture of you. I was just looking at it before we started. You had your kid with you, didn't you?
Yeah, I had my kid with me.
Yeah.
Well, he was a trooper. I was like, okay, he was about to cry and be like, come on, take a picture with daddy. Like, look at daddy. But, I mean, it really sunk in that we actually won when we got ready to leave and we had to take the pictures with a trophy in our hands. And I was like, well, this is it.
Got it.
We've been fighting for years for this. Well, this is it.
Isn't it a weird feeling, though, that it's it, like, I'll explain that the year that we won it, when it was all over with, it was like an empty feeling. Like, I mean, obviously not as sad as when you lost it, but it's an empty feeling like, man, it's over. I mean, what else, you know? I mean, all this year, 9 months, sweating, bleeding, practicing, traveling, getting yelled at, whistles blowing, running stairs, you know, doing sprints and everything else. And all of a sudden it's like, boom, you celebrate, but then it's over.
Yeah, you're thinking like you want a little bit more.
Yeah.
But that's it. I mean, yeah, you're right. This is that empty feeling. I mean, but you know, I mean, you got that feeling of fulfillment also. That I'll be fighting to get to the top, and I got there. At that time, I never thought about how I played or how did I do. Usually, I check the stats. A day or two before the game, after the game, but I never check the stats when we finish the game. But I really don't know the stats. The only thing that I know is because of Tyrese, because he played such a great game. I know he had a great game. I know he was great, but I really don't know what everybody else did.
You guys scored 25 points in 5 minute overtime period in that game, and two nights before you scored 23 in the fourth quarter against Cheska. So you guys stepped it up when you needed to. That was the key.
I mean, seriously, I mean, that was our goal too. I mean, when we have to go hard, we go. I mean, we will never stop fighting. And actually, we did that also in the playoffs against Milano. But it was the first game that we won like that. I mean, we came back in 45 seconds or something like that from a 9-point deficit to go for the overtime.
I remember that, yeah.
I mean, everybody really fight hard. I mean, and I got to give that to Coach Black. He always made the team fight hard. He made us a unit, and everybody had the same mindset.
He always seemed like one of those coaches that just was able to, like, relax everything, no matter what the situation was, you know? I mean, he'd do his yelling every now and then, but then all of a sudden, in the last 30 seconds, he'd be like, all right, everybody calm down. Let's do this. Let's do that.
A lot of coaches trying to do that reverse psychology thing, like, instead of when you mess around in practice, instead of making you run, you just, man, you got to stop. You don't deserve to practice here, so go home.
Right.
They make you go home, and, okay, let's be real. Some coaches, you're like, okay, just go home. Like, I don't care. But
I've been kicked out of a few practices in my life.
But with Vlad, you feel really bad. I remember every time he sent us home, everybody was staying, doing extra shots or, you know, trying to help. I remember Devin Smith. He was really active about trying to help people, you know, get the plays. Like down to the, you know, to practice plays a lot, not to think about the instinct. So we had I'm thinking you had a great group of guys.
Isn't it interesting how, like, you know, a lot of winning titles, because we play with teams and it's a team thing. You have to be in the right place at the right time, and And, you know, you were lucky to be in the right place. You've been at the right place at the right time a couple times, didn't get the chance to win that title. But the interesting thing throughout the interview that you always talk about is great teammates. That's the most important thing, I think, that you've gotten out of basketball, other than championships, is your teammates and your friendships.
That's true. I mean, especially in Tel Aviv Maccabi, I remember, we had a great environment, both in the locker room and the court. I mean, I remember people fighting or going crazy in the court. Once we were in the locker room, we'd be laughing and, you know, discussing.
Right.
Like, you remember how he was yelling? We started laughing and be like,
But that's when you know you have a good team, because there's enough self-respect within everybody else that you can actually get upset with a teammate and then laugh it off later and have a beer or have a wine or something, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I had a great teammates in the other teams too, especially like one of your guests, Kostas Papanikolaou. He was my teammate when he was young. He was like, what, 16, 17 at the time? I mean, my wife is here. She probably remembers. I called her. He told me we're staying in the same room. And he told me, like, man, you're like such a mama's boy. You always call your wife before you go to bed. I said, like, man, you better run because I'm about to. And I remember he was yelling. He'd be like, Irini, save me. He's hitting me. All time services. He's like,
hey, look, we had to move. I think we had to change his interview date because his wife had a pediatrician appointment or something. Yeah, so he's the one making the phone call at night now to say goodnight to his wife and kids.
Of course. I mean, he was young still.
Of course.
He don't know if that we don't call, what was going to happen afterwards.
Those young punks, once we get older, we just laugh at them, man. That's all.
Yeah, they don't know what will happen. I mean, they're thinking like getting married is about partnership. No, it's not. You're doing what you're told.
Exactly. We say I always have the last word in the household. It's yes, honey. Those are the last words.
Yeah, usually we say the same thing in the locker rooms. Like, I'm the man in the house.
Yeah, of course.
This is what happens. He's like, I have the last word. And I remember Devin Smith told me, when the last word is like, okay, baby.
Okay, baby. Exactly.
He's like, yeah. I was like, you're right.
Hey, after that, you win the championship and you leave. You go back to, you went to Serbia for a little bit in Pauk. And just to finish this up, you go down to an injury. That's, from what I see, the first major injury you had. You ruptured your Achilles tendon.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're coming to the end of your career, more or less. You know, you've achieved everything. Then, bam, this happens.
I mean, I wanted to try to play a little bit more after that. But yeah, it didn't happen. I mean, I wasn't feeling it. I wasn't feeling the desire to get the work done. And right. I mean, it was just tough after an Achilles injury, especially when you are older.
I mean, the one thing in your case, the one thing that helped you throughout your career was your size. Yeah, and that's the same thing that will hurt you trying to recuperate from an Achilles injury. That makes it even worse.
I remember that when I had my Achilles injury, I remember asking the doctors, like, I was like, it's because of my size. She's like, so for nobody right now, we don't have any clues about why an Achilles fracture. I mean, he told me, like, I had a kid, he was like 16 years old. He was walking down the sidewalk, boom, he had Achilles fracture.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really tough injury. The thing is, right now, the sport is going, it's getting faster. You have to jump higher.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of those injuries. And so hopefully we're going to catch up and have more preventive measures of, you know, I mean, usually, you know, you have to work this so you don't get that.
Right.
So hopefully we're going to go to the point where you have to work your...
Yeah, but like you said, though, the Achilles tendon, there's no rhyme or reason to that injury. It just happens to anybody.
Yeah, I mean, right now I heard it happened to Nikos Papas.
Yeah.
And I was shocked. I was like, man, that's really bad luck. I mean,
yeah.
But eventually, because of that, I decided to retire. So,
how's retirement, man?
Actually, when I was coming here to Corfu, our house here, I was talking with my wife and she was telling me, we have to do this, we have to do that when we get there. I said, like, you mean I have to do it? She's like, yeah, but you have to do it. Like, so, and then suddenly I went silent. And she asked me, like, why are you silent? What happened? I was like, I just had a relationship. I mean, I just realized that I've been playing for 15 years. My first 15 years, my mother was telling me, like, what to do. When to do it, how to do it, where to go.
I know where this is going.
For 20 years playing ball, my coaches were telling me what to do, where to go. And now that I retire, I realize for the rest of my life, you're going to tell me where to go, what to do. I was like, man, when am I going to get some freedom? She was like, you just realize that now? Like, you're a little bit slow. I was like, man, wow.
We get our freedom right in that moment when we can't really enjoy it anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm around the kids. Right. Of course, I decided the worst time to retire. Now we're in lockdown.
Right.
Basically, there's nothing to do. It's great. I mean, not great per se, but it's all right. I mean, I still got the bug. I still want to, you know, play and everything. I mean, I had a long conversation with Nikola Vujicic and Teo Papaloukas about the whole retiring stuff. And they told me, like, eventually you're going to start itching about, you know, playing a little bit, practicing, working out a little bit. But it will come in the future, not right now. So now just enjoy it.
If you need any advice, you can talk to me about it too, because I went through a rough time. I went through a little bit of a rough time. Like, my first year and a half was relatively easy, and I enjoyed it. And then it was like, once I knew I couldn't go back is when it hit me, and I was like, and I went through a little bit of depression, and you know, it was hard, man. It's not easy, because, you know, this game is, when you're an athlete, you don't just retire from the game, like, you fade away, you know. It's very few people went out like Michael Jordan went out, you know. Your agent stops getting phone calls, all of a sudden your agent stops calling you, and you don't have the retirement party, you know, with the cake and the watch, and they give you a watch. It's not like that. But that's true. Is something that I wanted to finish up with you is, I saw the round table thing you did about the mental aspect of the game and mental depression and players going through depression. It's a crazy subject, because I love that. I love the conversation you had, because you talked about the fact that you had anxiety at times to go out and play in front of people. We talked about the fact that when you walk off the court, people saying things that get to your head. Nobody realizes that these ups and downs, this emotional roller coaster, is something that's difficult for players to deal with. And like you guys said in that roundtable thing with the EuroLeague, is people perceive this as a weakness, and it's not a weakness at all. We're just normal people, and in the end of the day,
that's true. I mean, the mental part of the game, I mean, it's really tough, especially when you want to get that new talent, the new kid in the block that can jump, shoot, run, and you want to support your team as fast as possible. You need to be able to support him mentally also. I mean, you need people around that they can make him understand the things, how things work, and how things will develop. I mean, how to keep his cool, and how not every little thing try to get him. Because seriously now, nobody told me when I was 16 that suddenly I would walk in the court and 10,000 people were going to start kissing my mother. Yeah. And I was like...
Exactly.
I mean, that was an experience right there. The mental thing, the anxiety, that can develop if they not prepare you mentally at an early age. And things that can manifest in completely different ways. I mean, for me, it happened on anxiety. Those people, I mean, I'm never comfortable with people that I don't know. Mm-hmm. Or people that I don't feel that they know where I'm coming from, and severe sleeping disorder close to my closing years. And this is why I will say that if I had a chance to work with the younger generation, I will take it. I will take it, because I really don't want to, you know, kids going through something like that. But you know, that's a future conversation. And right now, I'm just enjoying my family life.
My final question is is if you can go back and do it all again, would you do it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would.
That's all that matters then.
Hopefully, I'll get more than one out of four, final four. So.
Yeah, well, if I could go back and do it all again, I'd try to get a couple more Final Fours too. But I think in my case, I think if I could go back and do it all again, I know there's things that I would do differently. You know what I mean? Along the way, but that's part of learning, isn't it? That's part of growing.
Yeah, but if I had the same knowledge that I have now, not basketball knowledge or not, you know, different skills or whatever, I mean, if I just have the same knowledge and the same tools that I have now to cope with different situations, yeah, I'll do it again. Mm. I mean, I really didn't like the whole anxiety and pressure that came with it.
Right.
I mean, when I was younger, but as I got older and realized that I can deal with it, if I had those tools then, I'll do it over again.
Was there ever a moment where you thought about walking away from the game beforehand?
Yeah, a lot of times.
A lot of times, right?
Yeah, a lot of times. Before you left the court, and you're like, man, enough of this shit. Stop. but afterwards, you drive. By the time you unload, you're calling your agent, and unload. And you're like, man, this is what happened to me. You're like, okay. By the time you're home, you're like, yeah, I can do a little bit more.
There's so much behind the scenes that people don't see, man. It's crazy. But that's the reason why we try to bring it out here in the crossover, man, just to let people know what we go through at times and what people are going through now. Let's get on to it, man. Let's get on to the last part of this thing, and I'll let you go hang out with the wife.
Yeah.
And do what I'm sure we In the States, we call it a to-do list. You know what a honey list? You know what that is?
Yeah, I know what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, but I know that you might want to stay here a little bit longer, man, if that list is long.
What are you talking about? I mean, this is the first time I had like an hour to myself with all the kids.
There you go. So I'm doing you a favor. All right, let's get into personality.
One-on-one with Joe R. Lucas.
You got a free round trip ticket to go anywhere in the world. What's your destination?
Wow. I would say Corfu.
That's where you're at right now.
Yeah, exactly. Man, it's so quiet. I always have been able to tell you, it's so quiet, so peaceful.
Hey, Euroleague will even pay for that ticket. The last movie or series you watched?
Wow. I watched a lot of things to say at the same time. So, okay. The last movie I watched was Godzilla against King Kong.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the last movie I watched. And now I'm rewatching the series Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders. Is that good?
It's all right. I mean, I don't understand the whole hype all around it. But
well, you just made up my mind. I'm not watching it.
I mean, there's hype around it. I mean, but it's enjoyable. I mean, I will say it's not.
All right. This next question isn't directly at you. This is something I've asked every guest on our show, even Costas. You sit down at a table to eat and you can order anything in the world. Anything. What's your go-to meal?
You know something? I'm not the restaurant guy. I mean, I really enjoy home-cooked meals.
It could be a home-cooked meal.
My wife and the mother, they excel in spaghetti bolognese, so I'll go there.
There you go. Perfect. Childhood idol.
I can't say I really had a specific idol.
No?
But, you know something? That's this thing, because for me growing up, I was already 15, and I was already, like, you know, playing ball.
You were already people's idol at 15.
Yeah, so I had Tim Duncan, Shaquille O'Neal. Those were like, yeah. And those were the guys that I looked up to. I mean, especially Tim Duncan. I love the way that he was always expressionless. He had no expression whatsoever, whatever happened. I mean,
just getting business done, getting work done.
Yeah, just getting business done. I mean, I wish I had that mentality, that mental fortitude.
Right.
I wish I had that.
Pre-game superstitions when you played?
I really don't have many, but I mean, every time before a game, I say a little prayer, touch the floor, and then for some reason, I touch both of my shoes.
That's a superstition.
Yeah.
Tell me the one game that if you can go back in time and play, you would love to play again.
2011. Against Panathinaikos. I would love to play that again. Change a couple stuff.
All right. Your top three EuroLeague memories.
2014, you win the EuroLeague, of course, number one. I would say 2011 against Panathinaikos. It was one of the top memories because that loss made me one of the way that I felt after the loss. It made me think, like, I don't want to feel that again, so I'm going to win the next one.
Right.
And
I like that because the memories don't always have to be positive ones. They can be negative ones that made you a better player or person.
And, third one, I would say the game against Milano in Tel Aviv that I had my best game in there.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. All right. What, I mean, you mentioned it already, but your plans when this is all over with? What I mean, it is over for you now, so to speak, and you're retired. But what are your plans now? I mean, are you going to go through and work out with the kids? You're going to try to like help them in different ways, or?
Right now, it's a little bit tough to map something up. But the thing is, like a friend of mine actually put it. It's like the good thing is because the whole situation, the way the situation is, it's not like you're standing still and the whole world is moving on. I mean, right. Everybody's standing still right now. Right. So you, when you decide to move, you better be certain. So it depends about where's an opening for me to be able to influence and have a positive influence, and when's the right time. I mean, I understand right now for the work that I want to do, I'm basically a rookie. So, it's tough. So
because of the situation too, it's nothing but plan it out, man. Now at least you have time to plan it out and be ready when things start moving again.
Yeah, I'll plan it out. I mean, I still got Dale's number, calling him every time. He's like, man, what do you want now? Like, you retired, why have to suffer? I was like, man, well, you took me under your wing when I was younger, so you suffered now.
Take my number down after. If you need any advice, hit me up too. I'll give you advice.
Of course.
Now the hardest part of the crossover tournament, man, is the trivia question. These are the only real answers that you don't know. So we're going to go five questions here. We're going to go, each question is worth an ascending amount of points. Question one worth 10, 2, 20, 3, 30, 4, 44, 5, 50. All right?
What's the high score?
I think our high score is 90. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's Costas. I'm not sure. My guy's got to like, why don't you guys text me over here and let me know the high score as I'm doing this. But you might have a chance. I'm going to tell you, you might have a chance.
The crossover test.
We're going to start off with a 10-point question. Here we go. Who is the 2014 Final Four MVP in Milan?
Tyrese Rice.
Go, see how easy this is? 10 points, man. No problem at all. Question number two. Which team is FC Barcelona facing in this year, 2020-2021 playoffs?
Dude, I haven't seen any basketball this season. I really don't know. Wait a minute. Let me get it straight.
You got to at least guess one.
Okay, let me think. I mean, I've seen the standings like a couple games ago, so I'll say Fener.
No, Zenit St. Petersburg.
And I was thinking that too. I read because they won Panathinaikos, they went to
Panathinaikos went to play them in one of the last games, and they beat Panathinaikos to get to the playoffs. Exactly. All right, question number three, worth 30 points. Which was the last team that David Blatt coached before being appointed as the head coach of Maccabi Tel Aviv?
Arsenal, Nicky.
There you go. Nice. 30 points, my man. That's a good one right there. That's a big one. So you got 40 altogether. Now the 40-point question. How many victories has Savannah Vesda got in this regular season?
I'll say 21.
No. They're out of the playoffs. They only won 10.
Wow.
They only won 10 this year.
Wow. That's messed up.
And now for the 50-point, and I think you may be able to get this one. I haven't been very confident about people getting this 50-point question, but I think you may be able to pull this one off. Which was the exact point difference between FC Barcelona and Real Madrid in the 2013-2014 semifinal?
Come on, man. It was like what?
We talked about it during the interview, and I didn't say it.
I don't remember. I know the beat him like no rock in a rock. What, like 30 points, something like that?
Oh, 38. They beat him by 38.
Oh, come on, man. All right. I need to call Kostas and yell at him.
I think Kostas is still lead. I'm not sure. No one sent me a text message to tell me any different. But, hey, my man, I really appreciate the time. I really appreciate your openness, your honesty. I appreciate the fact that, you know, you took time away from the wife and kids for a minute to be with me and my listeners. Now get yourself in shape because she's going to have you working over the next couple of years, man. So,
well, she was asking me, like, when are you going to work out? I was like, yeah, I'm going to work out eventually, but not right now.
Go run. Just go run. She might have you running stairs pretty soon, man.
Nah, come on, man. I was messed up. That was one of the messed up things ever.
Sovo, man, thanks so much for your time, man. I appreciate it. Great to talk to you. Great to get to meet you.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.